Verwandle deine Leidenschaft mit Shopify in ein Business und knack Umsatzrekorde mit dem Checkout mit der weltweit besten Conversion. Du hast richtig gehört. Der Checkout mit der weltweit besten Conversion. Der legendäre Checkout von Shopify vereinfacht das Shoppen auf deiner Website bis hin zu Social Media und überall dazwischen. Na, das ist Musik für deine Ohren. Wie du es auch drehst und wendest, mit Shopify kannst du zu einem echten Hit werden. Starte deinen Test noch heute für nur 1 Euro pro Monat auf shopify.de/rekorde.
Welcome to Recovering Gleek, a podcast for all of your complicated feelings about the TV show Glee.
Have room service, bring us breakfast. Record all through the day. If we're not Minnesotan by Monday, we can go our separate ways.
Whoa.
Wow.
There is nothing as glamorous to me as room service.
Right? There's a few things that as a kid, our parents were very serious about, mm-hmm. like, don't do this. And it's because, mm-hmm. you know, they didn't want us spending their money. But, like, yeah. the severity was so intense that in my anxious brain, I filed it away as, like, this is against yes. the law. Or, understood. Like, this oh, is yeah. against God's commandments.
No. That makes sense.
And so, like, to this day, as an adult, if someone's like, let's get room service, I'm like, I don't want to go to jail. Like, we can't get room service. Are you kidding me? Same with pay-per-view. If someone's like, although pay-per-view is not really a thing anymore since streaming.
I can't do pay-per-view.
But yeah, if someone was like, let's do something on pay-per-view, I'm like, I enjoy my freedom. Like, I'm not looking to, I like the ability to vote. I would not like to give that up.
I can't be a felon. Yum. Literally. So my roommate, I share an Amazon account with my parents, but we sometimes rent movies on their family's Amazon account. Mm-hmm. And the guilt I feel where I'm like, oh no, they're going to be mad. I definitely don't think I'm going to jail, but I definitely think they're going to be mad. Like, and I've told you, and I think I've told this story on the podcast that my mom wouldn't let me, like, her favorite treat growing up, and she's still, like, girlfriend loves a treat. She loves truffles. And they were turtle truffles, I remember, mm-hmm. like, the ones that are shaped like turtles. Mm-hmm. And she told me, she was like, these are not for kids. So for years, I think I was well into college before I realized that they didn't have alcohol in them. I was like, I can't have that. I'm going to get drunk.
They're not for kids.
I'm sure she didn't say yeah. like they at all, but she said they're not for kids. So in my mind, I went, you know what else is not for kids? Alcohol.
Yeah. Your brain just files it away, baby.
Yeah. And now when I eat turtles, I'm like, oh, I'm drunk.
You're like, oh, I'm a little tipsy. Sorry. Ooh, probably shouldn't drive tonight. I threw back a couple turtles.
Else, like, is this in a universal experience or what? The Martinellis that you had mm-hmm. from last year's New Year's celebration that's just been sitting in your pantry, you're like, it's probably fermented by now. I think you're getting a little drunk. Like, genuinely, I remember feeling like that and being like, I'm probably gonna get drunk from this. It's like, it's juice, sister, you're fine.
Oh my gosh. Oh,
well, growing up is so fun.
Hello everyone, my name is Ian Allred. I am in fact just a little bit hammered off of Martinelli's I had earlier.
Oh my god,
sorry, not very professional of me. I'm also a mini gleek.
Hey, what's up you guys, my name is Lena Knatzer, and you know what, I'm ordering room service tonight. You can't stop me.
No, I'm calling the police.
Breaking the law. Bang, bang. Oh, how are you? What's going on with you? I feel like I haven't seen you in a million years. Ian and I have, like, had no time to chat, so this is when we're chatting. How are you today?
Today, no comment. In general.
Oh, word. For sure.
In general, I'm doing pretty good. Okay. How far are we into rehearsals? We're 2 weeks into rehearsals. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Wow. We have learned the entirety of one of the shows that we're doing on the boat.
Cool.
And then tomorrow we start the second show.
Awesome.
I went and saw Moulin Rouge last night. That was very exciting. That was also very last minute. My roommate, I don't have a car, so like I can't do anything of my own free will and choice. And my roommate just randomly yesterday was like, "Do you want to see Moulin Rouge tonight at the Pantages?" And I said, "Would I?"
And then he said, "Boy, howdy, yes."
I said, "Absolutely, baby." And then we hopped in his car and said, drove to the Pantages. Car. It was awesome.
I love that. Did you enjoy it?
Yeah.
Was it better than the Broadway production?
Some aspects were.
Whoa! Hot takes from Allred.
I mean, obviously, some aspects weren't. Like, for example, a touring production just naturally can't have the same caliber as like production quality as a stationary version can. But it's still absolutely amazing. But I had a great time. That was fantastic.
I'm glad. Yeah. I'm glad.
How are you doing?
Today? No comment, honestly. I'm just kidding. Honestly, I'm actually fine. I just like, I'm overworked and underpaid, baby. Mm-hmm. And I just got done with a 9-show weekend. So I'm just exhausted. I luckily have one day off. Super duper tomorrow. So I'm going to sleep in as hard as I can. And then I'm going to do the whole thing next week.
Fun. That grind.
You know, it's the New York hustle. You know, just kind of got to do it, you know?
Yeah.
New York hustle.
Yeah.
Yeah. Are you ready to get into this mini-sode, broski?
Absolutely.
All right. Up first, we have a message from Emma.
Hello, sweet friends. How are ya? I'm fine. One of my best friends moved to New York, so I'm sad, but we promised to have weekly chats to, among other things, discuss our thoughts on your thoughts, which is already one of our favorite things to do.
Aww, that makes me happy.
I forgot to mention to all of our listeners who care about this, Alex Allred, Emma's email does have minor spoilers, so skip ahead a little bit. Back to Emma's email. Now getting down to it, the Funny Girl audition process is whack. More thoughts to come when we get to season 5, setting up a marquee before casting. But for now, I want to hammer in on this first step. Open call in a theater. Broadway theaters are some of the hottest real estate in New York. What theater is this? Is it currently housing another show? It's bad luck to use a theater during another show's run. Did the producers pay to have the theater this early? How much money are they spending on this production? Who are the producers anyway? If we've learned anything from the production of Funny Girl currently running, it's that cast is everything. Also, how did she have more than just a piano? I usually am all for suspending my disbelief, especially with this show. I watched all of it live. Clearly, I can forgive Ryan Murphy war crime. But this whole audition process is one thing I can't let go of. Maybe it's my fear that after watching Glee, people thought auditioning would be like that. Rachel being Fanny Bryce is really important to me, but now watching the auditions back as an adult, I'm a little mad at the ease with which she flew through it. Anyways, I skipped last week's episode. I will get back to it, I promise. But I do feel left out of the Princess Cruise news. Please, for anyone like me who went straight from bisexual Sam Truthers to Evan Evans, can you retell the story? To wrap up my essay, I ask a question. What has been your favorite and least favorite audition process you've done? Regardless of if you got the part in the end. I'm sure you got loads of great ones. Love you both lots, and shout out to Carly, my faraway friend of the pod. Consensual forehead kisses, Emma, your favorite Jesse St. James stan. Emma, there's truly not much of a story to tell. Just I got an offer to be a lead vocalist on Princess Cruise Lines, and I said yes. And so now I'm in California.
Princess Ian, let's call you that until you're done with the cruise. Princess Ian. Mm-hmm.
That's my new name until the contract ends.
Yeah, everyone please refer to Ian as Princess Ian, please. Sorry, Princess Ian as Princess Ian, please. Mm-hmm.
Please, 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 please.
Please, please, please.
And then I will be getting on the boat in August and singing in the high seas for a few months.
August slipped away like Ian on the Princess Cruise. Princess Ian, the Princess Cruise.
You know, when I first listened to that album, I was like, what is Taylor talking about here? It was very weird. And now it's all coming together. Now I'm like, oh, this is what that lyric meant. She knew all along.
She always knows.
Mm-hmm. Incredible.
That little girl.
Also, Emma, feel no pressure to listen to last week's episode.
Oh my gosh, a heavy one. Way. Yeah, absolutely.
It's a heavy one. But yeah, that's the one, that's the missing piece of the puzzle, as I do announce in that episode that I was leaving New York for a brief stint to do this job. And here we are, having left New York doing this job.
Yeah. I'm still holding it down in New York, though. Heck, I know you guys only listen to us because we're a New York-based podcast, but half of us are in New York City. Mm-hmm. Congrats on your new job, Princess Ian.
Thank you, thank you.
You're welcome, you're welcome. Do you have a favorite audition story?
My favorite audition process I ever did was to be a character at Disney World. I did not get it.
Okay.
But it's a very fun audition process.
Cool.
It started out, God, how did it begin? Oh, at the beginning, they just taught us like a 32 count dance combo. And I'm using the term dance loosely. It was like grapevine and clap and grapevine and clap and 3-point turn and clap. Like very, very not much. And
yeah, then totally.
After that, they cut a few people. And then those of us in that part, you know, was fine. But the part that was fun was after they did the initial cuts, those of us who were left got to do pantomime. And they they just gave us a scenario and then they put on music and they said, go. And the scenario that we were given is that we were monsters working for Monsters Incorporated. And we had to wake up and get ready for work, go about our day. And then we had to travel to work. And then a door came down and we opened the door and it had to be like some extreme environment of our choosing. And we had to react to that environment. And it was so, so fun. And you didn't really get to plan anything. They were just like, okay, here's the prompt. We'll give you like 45 seconds to think about it and make big physical choices with your character. Mm-hmm. And then we just like did it a few times for him. And it was so fun and so weird. And I had a great time.
I'm glad.
And then they said, you're too tall. Sorry, you won't fit in any of the costumes.
I hear that, being too tall.
Mm-hmm. That's a big thing. And I know that I think sometimes people try and get on Disney's case with that by saying they're like not body positive for that. And hear me out. Like, I get that in theater where it's like your body type doesn't look like how we picture this character, so we're not going to cast you. And that's screwed up and that needs to be done away with. But like, to be a character in Disneyland, really, they have the costume already made. They're just paying you to be a body in the costume. So like, I hold no ill will towards them that they were like, we're not willing to drop hundreds of dollars on a new costume for you to like do meet and greets in the park for a month. So like,
I totally
get that they're casting, frankly, for a person who will fit the costume they've already made first and then like talent second.
Totally. I hear that. I hear that for sure. Oh, Disney.
What's your favorite audition process you've done?
Well, I don't know that I have like a favorite. I'm like, I guess I've never auditioned for a thing in my life. I mean, this last show I did, auditioning now is all virtual. Like, I haven't done an in-person audition in like years. Mm-hmm. It's all been virtual and I've sent in videos and then if I've done callbacks, they've been virtual callbacks. I do have a memory that sticks out, and maybe you remember this, and maybe I'm like remembering it as something crazier than it was. Do you remember the Heathers audition at all?
I have like it's little bits and pieces of it remembered.
Well, what I remember is not how good it was, but how good I did.
No, that's true. You did do incredible.
Well, I remember
I had a friend who wanted the part that you ended up getting.
Mm-hmm.
And you did your callback because the callbacks would be like all watched each other.
Yeah.
And my friend literally finished and she was like, well, F me. Like after you sang.
It was my freshman year. Like it was like, what was it? Like November, October-ish?
Something like that. Yeah.
Like I was no one. Like no one knew me like from Adam, you know? And the audition was, we sang a part of like a Veronica solo every single person did. And then we were calling back certain characters. And the Marthas went first, I remember. Like, it wasn't anything crazy. But I remember I was like, I must have been third in line out of four Marthas. And I don't want to be dramatic. I was born to play Martha Dunstock. I also was born to play Veronica Sawyer, but my voice just fits in that song pretty well. And I remember no one knew who I was. And then I sang and I felt the air shift in the room. And I was like, that was actually a special moment, I thought. And then I remember E.P. Tiff was in the room too. And she, like, that was one of the first times her and I had spoken, and she complimented me. And then I, it was very exciting. But frankly, I don't remember any fun audition I've been a part of. But I do remember doing a good job in that audition. And I felt like Rachel Berry, where it was like the world shifted away. And I just sang that song. And I was like, and then I got back into my body. And I was like, I was just remembering my friends and how I wouldn't be who I was without my friends. You know what I mean? It was like that. Mm-hmm. But you were there. So you remember it kind of felt like that a little bit, right?
No, that's, was that, it, was, you know? That was not in your head.
Okay. That was fun. That was a fun one.
God, what's the worst audition process we've been a part of?
Jeez, don't even get me started.
I have like worst auditions, but it's not like the process was bad. It was like I had an off day and like didn't do great work. I'm trying to think of an audition where like the process itself was bad. My least favorite audition process ever has just been every self-tape I've ever done because I hate self-tapes.
Oh, yeah.
They're so overwhelming and I have worked past this now, thankfully, because I've done enough of them. But there was a period when I couldn't do a self-tape without crying. Like, I would just get so frustrated that I was guaranteed that I was going to break down at some point. But besides just the necessary evil of self-tapes, I sent in a self-tape, which is normal now. And then they wanted to call me back, but they were like, callbacks are in New York City. And it was while we were working at USF and I couldn't get to the city and all of that stuff. So I asked if it would at all be possible for me to like do a Zoom callback. And they said yes, which was very nice of them. But then when I did the Zoom callback, they so clearly could not have cared less about the Zoom callback. They were just doing it as a courtesy. And it was so obvious that like they had already written me off because I couldn't be there in person. And I had like spent all this time performing and like was so nervous and had set everything up so perfectly. And then they're just kind of like, cool. So they had me prepare like six different things, had me do one of them one time. And then they're like, okay, thank you. Do you have any questions for us? And I was like, you could have just told me that you didn't want me to come if I couldn't be in person. Like,
totally.
I didn't say that. Okay. But yeah.
No, but that I totally get that. Like, what a waste of time and energy, emotional energy. Mm-hmm. I hate that.
So that's probably my worst audition process. What about you?
Yeah. Oh, well, my worst audition process, you know, it is probably a little more dramatic. And I don't know that
I mean, you can talk about it as vague as you want.
Well, so my worst audition process was mostly in the preparation for this audition. I had a director one time in college. I'm going to say it. I'm going to say it. I don't care. I'm out of school. And I had a director that was going to do a show that was like my dream show in college. Pull me aside into their office and tell me that they were really considering me for, like, they picked this show for me. I was told by multiple people who were, like, involved in the process that they picked this show specifically for me. And then the director for that show, pulled me in and said that they were concerned about my thinly veiled, like, obviously this person was trying really hard not to say the words for, like, plausible deniability, but essentially was, like, we're worried about your hashtag stamina, which was just thinly veiled fat phobia. And then that sent me into like a year like of like really terrible like habits that I'm like still trying to unlearn. And I had like been trying to unlearn for a long time. and I like destroyed myself for it. And I fully did not get the part, which was heaven knows, like, could have been a million things, but I was essentially promised something in my mind, and then was told that I couldn't have it unless I fit a certain mold. And that was my worst audition process. So, yeah.
Yeah. Fun. That one is much worse than mine, baby.
Well, I mean, like, it's just not, it's not fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was really terrible.
Yeah, that's awful. I'm sorry.
Still trying to, well, Ian, you were there for like the whole
thing. I remember all of that.
Yeah. That was so terrible. And it was like the talk of the town too. It was so terrible. Anyway, that was my worst audition process. But isn't it so crazy how they're auditioning in this Broadway theater? What the fuck, funny girl? What the fuck?
No, it's craziness. And like you say, Emma, like, in a normal production, you move into the theater for tech. Like, theaters are expensive. Totally. The fact that they're leasing this theater out, not even for rehearsals, but for casting, which happens like for a Broadway show months before rehearsals even begin.
Totally.
Craziness. Absolutely bonkers crazy. It's insane.
Yeah. You're asking the right questions, Emma. What do you know a ton about theater?
Sure.
I think you know what you're talking about. But seriously. Also, I didn't know it was a bad luck to be in a theater, like, be in a theater during another show's run. I'm happy to know that now.
Yeah, I had no idea about that either.
Great. Emma taught us something today. Also, I'm so glad that you and your friend chat about our thoughts about Glee and share your thoughts about our thoughts. I love that. That makes me really happy. Thank you so much for this message, Emma. Up next, we have a message from Kayla.
Hey, guys. I absolutely love listening to the podcast on my bike ride to work every day. Since graduating from a theater program, this show has filled a space in my heart. I just wanted to comment on Nene Leakes' scene in Sweet Dreams. I'm a Black woman and now live in Brooklyn, New York, but grew up in Baltimore City. I often would hear gunshots at night and found it so microaggressive and gross that these white writers would use this Black character's experience with violence to invalidate the children having PTSD after school shooting as a means of moving past it. Also, random thought, as I am a Rachel hater, I could never look past the characters finding Rachel to be too talented for consequences. Would Mercedes not have been a better choice for Maria, casting her as Afro-Latina rather than a white girl? Not to mention that Mercedes simply sang it better? Anywho, sorry for the throwback. You guys are amazing, and I hope to see you in future productions. Kayla. Kayla, Rachel being Maria is...
Honestly, a throwback I'm glad we're bringing back. I'm glad we're bringing it back. Like, like, the wrong choice.
That school should not have been doing West Side Story. It's just... You know, it's a whole thing, and I completely agree. She had no business playing that part. It is problematic on so many levels, racially and like sensitivity wise and diversity wise. And then, as you mentioned, also talent wise, like,
yeah,
Amber Riley did those songs just as good, if not better, than Lea Michele. So, yeah, like, absolutely. What, like, on every level, it's just such a bizarre pick that they should not have gone with.
So bizarre.
Yeah.
So bizarre. But I so appreciate you bringing this up about the Nene Leakes scene, and I absolutely agree. Like, it is so not these writers' place to make a joke like that at all, and to like invalidate the feelings that these kids are feeling like that is, A, they shouldn't be invalidating these kids' feelings. And B, to say it like that, like, what the hell? I just think these writers are idiots.
Yeah, every way that they have dealt with the shooting, both during and the fallout, has been not great.
Yeah, absolutely. Kayla, I really appreciate this message. Thank you so much for sending it in. Up next, we have a message from Danae.
Hey, Ian and LPC. I think the way Shelby suddenly pops in and out of the show is so weird. I mean, the show has a bit of a habit of treating the characters as out of sight, out of mind, because when the actors for the characters aren't there, it's as if the characters are wiped from the timeline. And with some characters, it doesn't really matter that much. Like with April Rhodes, she kind of just comes and goes, but she never makes an attachment to any of the characters that makes it weird for her to suddenly leave the show. But when it comes to Shelby, she makes such an attachment to the show, with her being the coach of a rival glee club, with her being Rachel's mom, with her adopting the child of the teen pregnancy storyline that was a huge through line in the entire first season. And then in season two, it's as if she barely existed. And then at the start of season three, she shakes things up again, but then when she leaves, it is once again as if she never came back. I think it would really help the show if the writers would realize that they can talk about a character even if they're not in the show anymore. I think a lot of Rachel's behavior in season two would make more sense if it was ever acknowledged that Shelby breezing in and out of Rachel's life really made some abandonment issues and other problems a lot worse for her. And even if Idina could only be in one scene in this episode, if Rachel had mentioned a few episodes prior that she heard from Shelby again and that she moved into the city and that they're planning on catching up at some point, or even if Shelby found out from Quinn that Rachel was auditioning for Funny Girl, it would confirm that Quinn and Rachel still talk enough off screen that she knew about the audition. It would also confirm that Quinn and Shelby are talking again and that Quinn might have a chance to gain a relationship with Beth again. I understand that Quinn and Shelby can't be there all the time, and with Shelby, that's not even really a bad thing, because Diana was doing several movies now, and Idina was both recording Frozen, and I think also preparing for If Then, but it would be nice for the show to at least acknowledge the characters existing continuously instead of them just popping up randomly. I think what works a lot better about Marley wanting to write songs instead of Rachel is that Marley is established in her first episode to want to be a pop artist. And it's not that someone with Broadway aspirations can't want to try songwriting, but I feel like in season two, it does come off as kind of forced that Rachel is suddenly inspired to write music. I think if it had been a character like Mercedes, it would have felt a bit more natural. And so I'm happy they're taking a path like that now with Marley. I hope you have an amazing week, and I can't wait until your next episode, Danae. Danae, totally agree on the Marley Rachel thing.
Totally.
Because, like, you know, I'm a certified Glee original song hater. I just don't like the concept. And yet these ones...
Certified hater.
Truly. And yet these ones bothered me so much less. And I do think that the songs themselves are kind of just better songs. But I think you also really put your finger on one of the other reasons why that I hadn't thought of, which is this doesn't super feel like it came out of nowhere. This kind of fits Marley's vibe and what we know about Marley. Mm-hmm. Whereas totally. In season two, it just feels like a cash grab. It just feels like the writers being like, you know, if we didn't have to pay the artist royalties on these songs, we could make even more off of them. So now Rachel wants to write something.
Heyo. I love this idea of... It's like Glee... doesn't remember shit about itself, first of all, and especially about the characters who aren't around, and they have to like play catch up every time one of them comes back on screen. And I love this idea of if they would just like every once in a while like drop a word about Quinn or what's happening with Mercedes or what's happening with Shelby, like that would just like I think solve so many problems with Glee. But I think the problem with them is they like don't want to like definitively figure out what's happening with them until they need to use them again, because they heaven knows, I don't know.
I also think Glee has so many balls in the air at all times.
Oh, totally. I think they're juggling so many things.
I think the writers themselves forget these characters exist if they're not on screen. Like, quite honestly.
Totally.
Especially, and this is going to become super prevalent in season 5. Glee so frequently will just have characters fully vanish. No goodbye whatsoever. I mean, it just happened to Shelby in this episode. That becomes more and more frequent as the show goes on.
Also, where's Joe and Sugar?
Yeah, they just vanished. I think the writers like truly kind of forget. I think they themselves are out of sight, out of mind. And so then
I know I am. I have really terrible object permanence. I really can't blame them.
It's one of the requirements to be on the Glee writing staff is you have to have bad
guys,
object permanence.
I'm sending in my app.
You walk in for your interview and they introduce you to every single writer on the staff. And then you walk into your interview with Ryan. And at the end of the meeting, he goes, how many writers did you meet? And can you name a single one of them?
And you go, I met a writer.
And he says, you're hired. Welcome to the team.
I said, who did I meet? I have heard about job interviews in the past that have been like, also, do you know, or do you remember my name? And I've heard of that before, and people will go, I don't remember your name. I don't know why they do that. I personally, it takes me like a million years to remember names. I only remember your name half the time. And, truly, you know, the other half the time, I never remember to put princess in front of it.
Yeah. So many times we start recording and she's like, remind me again, what is it, like Queen Leroy? And I'm like, oh, Lena, it is Princess Ian. Like, we've known each other for six years now.
It's interesting. Come on. Queen Leroy is actually the one that comes up the most.
I know. More like, often than Princess Queen Ian.
Leroy. I know.
We'll be halfway through an episode. I have to literally like grinding my fingers to the bone, editing it out because you keep calling me Queen Leroy. And I'm like, you're going to confuse our listeners at this point.
I know. And it's so, you know, I don't want to get your name wrong.
Yeah.
I don't.
Yeah.
I just never remember. Oh my gosh. Well, Danae, thank you so much for this message. Up next, we have a message from B.
Hi, besties. B here, she, her from Canada, back at it again. Just wanted to express some more love for Rachel's Funny Girl Audition. Obviously, being a show about music, Glee deals with a lot of songs, to the point where I think a lot of the numbers lose their emotional richness simply because there are like 8 songs per episode. Don't Stop Believin', however, encapsulates Glee's ethos perfectly. I maintain that Glee is a reaction to the recession, and watching it lose its bite and heart a little as America's economic and political environment changed is really interesting. This song to me will always be representative of Will's absolute need for the arts during a really difficult time in his and these kids' lives. It recently occurred to me that the lyrics of the song are kind of a setup for the show. Just a small town girl living in a lonely world. That's Rachel. She's literally a small town girl, but also feels like she's bigger than her town because she is destined to live in New York and is so alienated. Just a city boy born and raised in South Detroit. This is Finn. The born and raised is crucial because of his conflicted relationship to his hometown, which he hates but feels so tied to and comes back to again and again. The strangers waiting up and down the boulevard are the Glee kids, who are all waiting for a chance to express themselves and wouldn't be friends with each other if not for the club. They and Will are all people living just to find emotion. The second verse then turns back to Will. Working hard to get my fill, everybody wants a thrill, paying anything to roll the dice just one more time. In the first season, he's working extra shifts at the school, trying too hard through the Glee Club and the acapellas to experience music and performing again. He's trying so hard to recapture that sense of expression. This was probably intentional, but it kind of blew my mind. This song is so perfectly chosen and so triumphant and reassuring already that it always works when the show uses it. It represents the core value of the show, but also points out why the show doesn't quite land in the later seasons. The Glee Club doesn't really struggle. Yes, the individual members have their own drama, but no matter how many times Sue threatens to end the club, if they don't win whatever competition, it never feels like that much of a threat. In season one, they had to fight so hard to keep the club afloat, and that fight dissipates as the other teams get less and less threatening and the bullies at school are less and less cruel to the Glee kids. The show is at its best when these kids are unified by their love of music and their feeling alone, which you just don't get anymore. Having Rachel sing it for her audition and including the original Glee members was really sweet and honestly powerful and makes me think the show should have ended there. Bookending this story about music's healing powers and learning about yourself through cooperation with others, aka the point of school clubs, with two performances of the same song about that same story would have been beautiful. I think I've rambled for long enough, so thanks for reading. Love the show. New episodes are the perfect midweek treat. Wishing you both luck in your musical endeavors and sending consensual forehead kisses, B. B, this email is so beautiful. I like cannot express it.
I love this email.
I also love you saying that you really believe that Glee was a reaction to the recession.
Yeah.
And, you know, who can ever know? But I sometimes forget how just kind of like dismal everything was in those years, the mid 2000s when everything was going to crap economically. And yeah, like this show about these kids and this teacher just fighting for their lives. Like Glee itself was essentially a thesis on why arts need to be in schools and like yeah. how much it can change a student's life and why they should not be being cut because like, you know, the school needs more budget for whatever reason. And everything you say about the song and how it like perfectly tells yeah. the story of Glee. Incredible. Amazing. Fabulous.
I know. I totally agree.
Yeah, I agree. I think that Glee, as Glee stopped kind of being a show that had to fight for its right to exist, it then kind of stopped telling the stories about
yeah.
a club that had to fight for its right to exist, and it lost a bit of its
yeah.
emotional heart in the process. But
definitely, which is like so sad to say, like, you know, Glee was its best when these kids were being bullied and they were lonely. I think... you know, that's so hard to say, but it's also so true. And that's, you know, when I watch Rachel Berry's wish fulfillment TV show, I don't relate to that, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. Like, as much as I would love that, that's just not my life. And I feel very connected to the plot points in season one, you know,
literally.
And as much as I would love to like watch Rachel go from point A to point B in a beautiful, like triumphant way that I'm sure they're going for, it just like, it doesn't, you know, it loses the heart of what's going on. Mm-hmm. And it's in favor of like, I don't know, actors' egos and like the money of the show and all of that kind of stuff, you know? I love so much. I have kind of always felt like Don't Stop Believin' is Glee. Mm-hmm. Like I could never put my finger on it, but you like literally like laying it out like this, B, is so beautiful. And I'm so grateful you did it because this is all just everything. Like the different kids in the club and like even Will, like I love this. Like it is, this song is so beautiful and so special, and the show is so awesome for even like for even doing that, and I'm so glad you pointed it out to us.
Well, and it's like, you know, if Rachel had sung any other song for her audition, you know, who's to say how good it would have been? It didn't happen.
Yeah. But
I personally can't imagine it would have had the emotional effect on me if yeah. it had been any other song than this one, because like you said, yeah. it's just like her wish fulfillment. And like, yes, you know, I care about Rachel because I cared about her so strongly in seasons one and two. So mm-hmm. part of that is still in my heart that I just kind of be like, oh, this beautiful girl who gets everything she wants now goes and sings a song beautifully and they eat it up. Good for her.
Yeah.
But just to hear this song and remember that girl who's sitting on the bleachers that Will has to come and talk to her to get her to come back to the club. And she talks about how everyone at the school hates her and she wants everything too much. And just like, she feels so out of her skin at this place. And to see, like, it sounds so corny, but like, you know, she didn't stop believing. And like, here she is, like she
yeah.
has, she's reaching her dreams. And it takes what would have been a plot point that made me roll my eyes of like, oh, of course Rachel gets a callback for this Broadway show. And instead I'm like, yay, she got a callback. Like that poor lonely girl who got slushied in the hallway and had people comment on her video saying her parents should have been sterilized is finally getting what she wanted yeah. in those early episodes.
Totally. Man, B, thank you so much for this message. It is very special to me and I'm going to think about this forever. That's your minisode, y'all.
Hey, yo.
Ian, it's your turn to go first on the relative pitch game.
Heck yeah. We got Next to Me by Emily Sade. We got Fight Your Right to Party by the Beastie Boys. You Have More Friends Than You Know. Please don't make me sing that song. I don't know how it goes.
Oh, I won't.
Don't Stop Believing by Journey. and Outkast. Please don't make me sing that song. I did, however, okay. I did find out who wrote Outkast because you asked.
Oh, tell me.
Uh-huh. You asked and I didn't know the answer. And then I cut it out of the audio version of the podcast because I was embarrassed that we didn't have an answer. But it was written by Shelley Piken.
Cool.
And Shelley Piken has written a ton of stuff.
Cool.
She wrote Gollum. She wrote, come on over, oh, baby.
That's awesome. Great.
She's written for Celine Dion. She's written for Keith Urban. For Lindsay Lohan. For the Backstreet Boys. She's written for Miley Cyrus. Like, she has written a million songs people.
That's super cool. All right. What do I want to make you sing? I think you should sing Don't Stop Believin'.
Oh, that I literally was like, that's not in this episode. We literally just talked about it for 10 minutes. Okay. Here we go. Don't stop believing. Hang on to that feeling. Streetlights, people. That's what I think it is. Okay, I either sing a C or a C sharp. I don't know which one, so I'm going with a C. Don't stop, I think, is a C to a B.
Okay.
And you know, if I was wrong and it was actually a C sharp to a C, then I'll put a little boop in here.
Damn, this song is so good.
That's a B, so I'm either a half step sharp or a full step sharp, depending on what I say.
Okay, honestly, let's say half step. That's great.
Let's all agree that I sang a C and I'm a half step sharp. You're going to sing Five Fear Right. Do you want to do Five Fear Right to Party?
I can.
Okay, do that one.
I'm nervous. It's all.
It is kind of talked. It's shouted. You're correct. Scratch that. You're singing next to me.
No, I'm going to do it. No. Because it's like yelling. It's yelling on pitch. Like, you got to fight for your right to party. I think it's that.
For your right.
To party.
Okay, so your yelling is on an A. The fight. Okay. For your right.
Oh, dang.
You're a step sharp.
Damn.
That's a G.
I know I usually don't want to be right, but I wanted to be right for that.
Usually you're like, oh, please let me be off pitch. Please. I really want to lose. Well, I really need to lose this week. It's been a really good week for me. I really need a loss.
I know. My ego's too big. I need to take an L really quick. All right. Well, we'll see you all here on Wednesday for Lights Out, baby.
Hey, yo. We'll see you soon.
Hey, yo. Well, I hope you guys have a great rest of your week. We'll miss you. We'll miss each other, mostly. I haven't seen this man in a million years. Princess Ian, love you. Well, here is a kiss on your forehead, if you accept it. A tiny kiss on your tiny little mini forehead.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to Recovering Gleek. You can find us on Instagram and TikTok at recoveringgleek_podcast. If you liked our podcast, be sure to leave a review. And tell your friends, please.
My advice for entrepreneurs is definitely to level up with Shopify. The platform is just never a worry. Like, I have so many worries, but the platform is never one. I feel like Shopify really thinks about how they can optimize. It just always feels very ahead of the curve. Everything is just super easy to connect and link. They really know what we need. Time and money that is saved, I can spend on other things and on growth.
Start your free trial at shopify.com.